used to know, where the treetops glisten and children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas with every Christmas card I write. May your days be merry and bright, and may all your Christmases be white.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know, where the treetops glisten and children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas with every Christmas card I write. Days be merry and bright, and may all your Christmases be
Hello and welcome to the final Tuesday Sports Show before Christmas. It's a bit of a makeshift one, shall we say.
I can tell it's Christmas.
Yeah, everyone's got a bit busy. So it's going to be me, your host Gavin Fell, along with Emily Oxbury, and we're going to be talking about the the interesting case of Patrick Reed, who after cheating, says he should not be called a cheat. Russia being banned from all major sporting events, so that's everything basically at the world level, for 4 years, and the England squad for their cricketing tour of South Africa. But first, let's get to what's probably the most interesting story.
Most annoying, definitely.
Yeah, it's most interesting. So Patrick Reed, the 2018 Masters champion, at the Hero World Challenge last Friday, moved sand in a bunker with his practice swing, which has a two-stroke penalty, and he's saying that if you break the rules unintentionally, it's not cheating.
But it is.
But he broke the rules, which, you know, if you break the rules and keep going, it's cheating.
I mean, intentional or not, that's not the point. It is what the action was, and that was cheating. And we were discussing earlier, like, games, if you break the rules, often, if you can, you're given, like, a penalty during the game and things, and obviously in the case of golf, you can't.
And with most of these things, there's not, and particularly in golf, there's not really any sort of, in the rules, there's no intentionality in it.
Mm.
It's either you did this thing or you didn't. It doesn't care about whether you intentionally
intended to do it or not.
Yeah. If you move essentially the rough or the sand with your practice swing, it's a penalty. Which is,
I think, as well, if you watch the video, he does it twice.
Yeah.
So, I mean, surely if you've done it, you sort of notice on the first time and then definitely not do it a second time. So it's just, and he said, I mean, he admitted in one of the interviews afterwards I was watching, he said, yes, it was a breach of rules. So surely I don't see why he doesn't think there should be consequences for it. And
yeah,
that.
Because maybe the thing is, no one ever wants to be called a cheat.
No.
So they're always going to find, so regardless, they're always going to find some way of wiggling out semantically, like with this, where he's saying, if you break the rules unintentionally, it's not cheating. It's like, it gives you an advantage, therefore it's cheating. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So everyone always tries to explain it away with intentionality, or like with some situations, like with, you know, if someone's taking performance enhancing drugs, they say everyone's on it. It's like, that still doesn't
suddenly
mean
makes
that
it
doesn't
okay,
make it like, that doesn't mean it's not against the rules. So that's the big
And he said as well, he kind of claimed in one of these interviews again that he would have hit a better line if he had have done it intentionally. So he's always then still covering up, saying like, look, obviously I did badly. How could I have cheated?
Yeah, like, it's like, how could it be intentional? Because it's sort of serving that larger argument where it's like, it's not cheating if it's not intentional. And I did so badly that it can't have been intentional, which means it's not cheating. Yeah. So it's like, or maybe you were just cheating really badly.
Just, yeah.
That's the other thing.
He's so embarrassed.
We have to remember that sometimes
just
people just.
Out.
Yeah, sometimes people cheat and it goes badly because they're bad at cheating.
Yeah.
Just specifically. It's like, for example, with what we're going to get onto later with cricket, where you had the Australians with the sandpaper. It's like, part of the reason it was so obvious was because, at least by all indications, it was something that they had not done before, so they didn't really know how to hide it.
Yeah.
If you cheat regularly, you're going to get good at
knowing how to cover up the cheating.
You're not going
to
get caught.
No, exactly.
Most of the time you catch cheaters is because they're bad at cheating.
Yeah.
And we caught him.
And the fact is, with sports nowadays, like, it's all being televised. Obviously, with football, we've got things like VAR and that. Surely they're going to realise that there are eyes on them all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I can't remember which major it was at, but a few years ago, it was almost decided by someone watching at home.
Yeah.
There was a major tournament that was decided by someone watching at home on their TV, saw someone did something illegal, called up the golf club, and got the guy a points penalty.
Yeah.
And
you can rewatch every moment in sport nowadays. So,
and this is something that it's not even something that's buried in the rule book that no one really knows except people who are really into the rules of golf. Not even golf, the rules of golf. This is something that's fairly normal.
I mean, I was watching the video, wasn't I? And straight away went, he's moving the sand.
Yeah,
like, and I definitely couldn't tell you many of the rules of golf, but I think you know that if you're in the bunker, there's a reason that bunkers exist.
Yeah, the whole thing is it's meant to be difficult. If you're allowed to sort of like, okay, I'm going to get rid of all the sand, give myself a nice little shot out of it, that kind of
defeats
the
purpose. Playing mini golf, like just rolling the ball in. Like, it's ridiculous. And he's also now playing it and saying that he kind of hopes it spurs him on for the Champions Cup, isn't it?
President's Cup, which is like the Ryder Cup, but not.
Every article I've read about it keeps saying the Ryder Cup style tournament.
Like, yeah, it's basically, just for anyone who cares about golf, it's basically the Ryder Cup. Instead of being the US versus Europe, it's the US versus the world.
The world.
But
he's now saying like it's going to kind of spur him on for that, and he's almost like, he's loving it, I think.
He's someone where he's someone who's pretty unpopular on the tour, which, to put it mildly, so it's one where it's not exactly going to lose many friends, but it's always interesting to think about. It's like, okay, how much of cheating does it have to be intentional? Where exactly is the intentionality in it? So it's like, if you're doing something, if it's completely accidental, so like you have your supplement from your local Holland & Barrett.
Yes.
Or some other shop that sells these things semi-legitimately. And it turns out that there's something that's not on the label that then causes you to test positive. You're not really trying to cheat.
No. But it's then how you deal with that and where you separate it that becomes difficult,
it's the difference between that or you're buying something online which has some name like Explode Muscle Growth or something like that. And it's like,
there's intention there.
You should probably be able to guess it. There might be something dodgy in there.
Yeah. Or in the case of, it was Chris Froome, wasn't it? And
that one's a bit suspect.
Things like that.
Well, the other one which people always bring up is Alan Baxter, where he was doing something and it was basically that the ingredients in Vicks in Europe has something that's against the rules, but it's different from the British one. Yeah, so it's where exactly that sort of line is. So it's like, okay, obviously taking, you know, testosterone or HGH or whatever, really obviously illegal thing, or sort of kneecapping your opponent, or you know, anyone remember things.
Injuring someone
obvious
else.
Obvious cheating, right down to, oh, Vicks in Europe has something allowed. So it's sort of, where exactly on that line do you think this falls?
Less away from the Vicksing and more towards the straight pushing your opponents down, I think.
Yeah.
And I think
if we divide it in half, it's definitely in that half.
It's in that
exactly
half,
right
at the end. I mean, I've seen worse things, I'd say.
You're definitely getting a clear advantage from If it's what it's, yeah. Even if someone who doesn't care about golf is like, okay, that's going to make things easier.
Mm.
It doesn't matter if it's intentional. I was going
to
say,
it's like, clear to anyone that that was going to help him out. And I think as well, the amount he's going on, not amount he's going on about it afterwards, because obviously he's being interviewed about it.
Yeah, because a lot of these things where it's like, oh, someone's going on and on about this thing is basically because they keep getting asked about it.
Because they, yeah. But, I mean, it's just... He was saying things about, like, the camera angle might have been deceptive, and he just kind of keeps coming up with more and more excuses, and I do just think, accept it, take it in your stride.
You're protesting too much. It's always where it's sort of when you start getting into stuff like... whenever you start getting into the camera angles, it's like, okay, you're getting...
Yeah.
You're almost making me believe that you did it deliberately with how much you're complaining at this point.
He's almost, like, quite proud of it, as I said earlier.
Well, it's always just sort of like... it's always where it starts to make you think less that, okay, this was an honest-ish mistake, and, okay, you might have actually done it.
Planned, and it's gone wrong because he's been caught, and so is now backtracking.
Or it's always where it's like, he doesn't normally do this, and so he was kind of uncomfortable doing it, so then he did it badly, and now he's trying to cover up because he got caught.
Yeah.
And it's just...
And he got the 2 penalty, didn't he? But he ended up losing by 2.
Right? He lost by 2 in the end, which is the other thing. Yeah. Like this, where it's going to hurt him a little bit.
Maybe that's why. Maybe he's very upset.
It's going to make...
Touchy subject.
It's going to make you a bit touchy. Because, he lost by 2. So it's right. If he'd not got that, he would have been in a playoff, which meant he could have won.
Yeah.
And it's one of these things where it's... It doesn't help that he's got then this President's Cup coming because he's a wildcard selection, so it's not even like he got there. Like, it's not a merit, but he didn't automatically qualify, and then he's going to be a bit touchy about that right now because he's going to feel like
part of the main team. And,
so it's always, a lot of time, particularly if it's not sort of, an established old pro, like when you'd have Tiger Woods get in, or Ernie also Phil Mickelson, where it's like, okay, you might not get the ranking points, but you're really good at this, let's chuck you in. And so he's going to be a bit touchy about that. And then it's obviously then producing the criticism of everyone from the international team saying, cheating.
Yeah. So-and-so. I was going to say, a lot of the Australians in particular, because we were mentioning the cricket example with the sandpaper earlier. One of the articles was talking about how, the Australians do not accept cheats back into their country kind of thing. And they were kind of looking forward to getting revenge almost for this,
When you have such a sporting culture, it tends to be very black and white.
Yeah.
So then it's why it's like, it took a lot for those 3 cricketers to get back into the fold, and then they're going to look at Patrick Reed pretty negatively because there are a few Australians on this team as well.
Yeah, and I think some of those Australians were saying, like, how Australia, not just them, but how, like, for instance, in cricket they were treated, and as you said, it takes them a long time to get back into their team. And whereas in this example, Tiger Woods is... I don't think he's come out in support, but he kind of said, like, what's happened.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's like, oh, he's a great kid.
Yeah, they kind of let him off.
We're moving on with it.
Yeah, just kind of brushing it under the carpet and now focusing on that President's Cup. But it's,
It's like, you're not exactly... When you're the team captain, you're not really going to be throwing him under the bus with this, but you don't have to be quite so hard sweeping it under the rug.
Yeah. Someone else called his actions pretty ordinary. Mark Leisham? An opponent? But if you start making that pretty ordinary, then everyone's going to start doing it.
Everyone's going to start looking, and in the past, you can call up and get someone a penalty. Then everyone's going to be sort of like going frame by frame when they're watching for bunker shots to be like, okay, has he moved the sand at all?
Start getting every camera angle if you think the angles are deceptive. So.
And we don't want to see these things being decided by who was watching.
Because
it makes it feel less sporting.
There's referees for a point, and
however the officials work with this, we don't want it. And because then it's ways where if someone's low profile or the wrong person is, or the right person isn't watching, then it's all about even more circumstantial than just did the referee miss it or not.
We were saying as well, in this example, it's interesting that the penalty was given kind of straight away, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was straight away. It was the end of the round, which is basically as soon as they could have given it. And as far as we know, I don't think it was one of these things where it was, I believe it's Dustin Johnson a few years ago, where it was literally someone calling up the golf club. But I think it was someone spotting it.
Noticing it straight away, yeah.
And it's always different when it is sort of going through the proper process.
Yeah.
It always makes you feel a little bit better. It's not sort of, oh, yeah, this is kind of sketchy.
It's, yeah, not happening like a week later and just someone kind of not being happy with the result and then it happening. So.
Yeah, because that's the other thing where it's sort of, because even then, if it's always where it's a week later, it wouldn't necessarily be able to affect the result. It's just sort of being able to then sort of say, oh, you're a cheater.
Just, yeah.
Which, you know.
Like putting the term cheater onto people.
Yeah, and it's always where it's hard to, it's like with all these things, it's hard to get rid of.
Yeah.
Which is part of why these people always try to, whether they did cheat or whether they just happen to break the rules or whatever, they always try to get around.
I was going to say, I think that's why he's reacted how he is, because he knows he's got the President's Cup coming up and so has just got to kind of move on and
it's focuses
on
when
it
he's,
too much. Like,
when he's not the most popular player as well, it's anyway, you really want to protect your reputation you do have. You don't want to have other reasons for someone to dislike you.
Yeah.
Or for your fellow professionals even to dislike you, because that's the other
thing. The thing. He's now going into a team tournament and so you've got to work together and not have your fellow players against you, really.
Yeah, it's always it's just going to be a bit of a rubbish time just, if you're sort of there for however many...
If you feel like you're, even your teammates are watching out for you cheating. Like,
yeah, so like, oh, okay, everyone hates me here. Cool,
yeah, great.
And it's... So. And it's always where it's just... It's going to be a bit of... And he's not had the greatest time since winning the Masters... Last year, he's just sort of he's slipped down a bit. He's not really. He didn't have the greatest Ryder Cup.
No,
and so it's partly just sort of you don't want to have a distraction. The old distraction thing where no one wants any distractions, distraction free,
yeah,
etc., etc., etc. That's part of the thing with Woods as well, trying to move on from it, because Tiger Woods knows all about distractions. So he knows exactly how powerful they can be when they are. A factor, because it's basically where as well, whereas some people just doesn't matter, some people it can matter all.
It makes all
the difference, yeah.
Yeah.
No, and so with this, it's just, it's a bit of a weird story.
He's just contesting the English language, really, I mean.
Yeah, so it's almost like, what is cheating?
Yeah.
Write a 2,000 word essay and come back to us.
Oh, goodness.
So yeah, we're going to give you a break now to write that 2,000 word essay about what exactly is cheating, and we're going to leave you with Last Christmas by Cascada.
Someone special. special.
Hello and welcome back to the Tuesday Sports Show. So now we're going to be talking about what I believe was talked about yesterday as well, but we're going to talk about it from a more sporting perspective today in terms of Russia have been handed a four-year ban from all major sporting events by WADA, the World Anti-Doping Agency. So that means that the flag and the anthem in particular won't be allowed at the 2020 Olympics and Paralympics and the 2022 Football Cup. But anyone who can prove that they aren't part of this can compete under a neutral flag. So you had a bunch of them do that the last time Russia had this kind of ban in Sochi in 2018. So it's not necessarily super impactful for the athletes, but on an administrative level, it's pretty big.
Yeah, the athletes probably just thinking, here we go again, let's
reapply. Yeah, because that's the thing. For anyone who really is not involved in this, it doesn't matter. Like, yeah, they won't be able to win it officially for Russia. But
probably
like,
unlikely to happen at the Olympics anyway.
Yeah, well, with some of these as well, where it's like with the middle distance runners, it's like, yeah, even if you somehow weren't affected by this, given that it seems like that's a real one with Russia where they do dope,
yeah,
it's, you know, if you win it, because they still have a good chance of winning it, so it's like, okay, you're winning it, but you got the Olympic flag. Okay, I still want to go a medal.
Yeah, I think the thing with the Olympics as well is generally it's, well, a lot, it depends on the sport, obviously, but...
And it depends on the country,
the
like some...
Like, it's you winning, it's them winning for themselves as an individual.
Yeah, and that's one of those things where it depends slightly on the country. Like Russian, the Russian athletes tend to be very patriotic and all that, but they'll still know at heart they want it for Russia. Because the last time this happened, because yes, this is not the first time that Russia have had this kind of punishment meted out, was for the Sochi Winter Olympics. And they basically, I think they might have had literally their own classification, where it's the Olympic athletes from Russia.
Yeah.
So it's like everyone knows it's still Russia.
I honestly can't remember the last time I saw Russia compete in the Olympics as Russia, but I always knew that if I saw that little Olympic flag pop up, that was probably 90% going to be a Russian athlete.
It's just like, and then in all your, other than on the podium, it's all the same.
Yeah.
I mean, other than the podium in your kit, it's all basically still.
And that almost makes me question what the point is, because like we say, everyone as a spectator knows that they're from Russia anyway, so it's not kind of erasing the fact that we know they're Russian.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's the problem is this hard to sort of for WADA to be able to say, like, okay, all these people are actually implicated in this. So unless you have, so you're not going to have very many people banged to rights.
Yeah.
So then there are a bunch of people, who could have been doping the whole time, who will still be able to get in.
So
it doesn't necessarily even
really
work.
Not really solve the problem at all. Yeah.
Because it's makes sense to have it there as a punishment, because in some of these cases, so for example, those are going historically after the Seoul Olympics, you could have said, okay, all these Canadian sprinters, we have the book, we have the literal notebooks that say, okay, these people are all taking this stuff. So then, yeah, you could say, okay, everyone else from Canada can compete.
Yeah.
But these, you know,
set number of people
can't. But with this, it's more administrative stuff. So then you can't sort of say, okay, you know, everyone from, well, I mean, there's actually one of the big success stories where there was the ice hockey team, so you couldn't have said, like, okay, we have this data that shows that all the ice hockey team was cheating, so you can't pick them. So when it's something like that, there were over 100 athletes I think at the Sochi Olympics, and it's sort of okay, how I get having this on the books, but how useful is it in this situation?
If it then turned out that Russia could only send, you know, 3 or 4 athletes, it would make an impact.
Sort of, if you made it sort of like, if you had to have it that the athletes had to prove it beyond any sort of total doubt that they weren't involved and they were super clean and everything, then it might have some more teeth that other than just sort of like, basically everyone except for like a dozen people will be able to probably get it.
Yeah, which then makes it pretty pointless, I'd say.
And then even with that, you have the president saying that they're probably going to appeal the decision, which is probably one of these situations where, like with a couple of teams in football that got transfer bans that basically appealed so they could delay it, so they could get a bunch of business done. That's probably what this is going to be. If they appeal,
we were just saying they're probably going to delay it until the Olympics, aren't they?
So. Stall the punishment until the Olympics and hope you get a reduction, because otherwise it's like, okay, we can't actually compete at the next Olympics. But so it's either way, with a four-year punishment, you're probably going to get a ban from an Olympics.
Yeah, I imagine that's... I mean, I don't know the kind of ins and outs of it, but I imagine 4 years is chosen for the
Because it's basically one of his role. Because most of the time that WADA are involved, it's with athletics stuff. Like, a lot of sports have their own bodies that deal with this stuff. So most of them, yeah, it's athletics, which is why the big thing with this is they're going to miss the Olympics. But yeah, so yeah, it's worse where you'll have 4 years for a lot of punishments, both individually and on this level, because it's, yeah, it's taking out an Olympic cycle, which is how the sport functions.
And then obviously the World Cup within that as well.
Yeah, World Cup just happens to be part of this because Russia are half decent at football. It's not it's not sort of like a situation where, okay, it's China who have been banned for 4 years. It's like, okay, so they're not really going to miss the World Cup. They would have missed that anyway.
Yeah. So, but, and Euro 2020, obviously they did qualify for.
Yeah, because that's the thing where we're, again, talking about this during the break, but where it makes sense for WADA to pick that level because, you know, if you're going to be sort of saying, okay, all world and continental tournaments, you're going to be getting into like the South American rugby championships. And it's like, yeah, we don't care about that.
Doesn't compete knows about. So.
Yeah. So it's, you're going to get this sort of tiny levels. And so it makes sense. Okay, let's just go with the world one. Cause then you're sort of passing, okay, which continental tournament is major and which isn't.
Yeah. It's like the Patrick Reed thing again. Mm. What's classed as a major. So
yeah. It's, so it's being able to say, okay, these things are just, okay, this is what counts as major. So then it's where people are all surprised because a lot of people think, oh yes, the Euros is a major tournament, but on an international sport level, from that sort of very high remove, yeah, it's just world level.
I guess
stuff.
It almost removes just like the top one event for each sport, doesn't it? Whereas Euro is the second, because obviously you've got the World Cup.
Or the third. Okay, that's what it is. Like, some people, basically, it's based on what continent you're in. People in South America will think, oh, yes, the Copa America is the second most important tournament. And people in Africa will think, oh, yes, the African Cup of Nations is the second.
They're probably looking at Euro and thinking, we don't care.
Yeah, it's when we're getting into sports like rugby as well, where it's sort of, okay, yes, there are two. There are probably three major rugby tournaments, but you can't sort of make that. You can't say that.
We're looking at it from our perspective, aren't we? It's what's important to you.
Yeah, so and particularly when you have to think, why do I have to make a rule that works for everyone?
Yes.
So it's sort of for every sport. So you can't just sort of say, oh yes, in this tournament, in this sport, like in cross country skiing, these tournaments count. In football, these tournaments count. In cricket, these tournaments.
It would take you the 4 years to write that list.
Yeah, just go with the global stuff. Just knock everything out from that level. And that's where you get into some other weirdness. So where the promoters of the Russian Grand Prix are saying they're confident the race will go ahead. And it's like, does that apply to F1? Does that?
That's what we were saying as well about Euro, because they're set to host one of the
with the weird way it works, like they're hosting some matches, and it's like those would be pretty easy to remove, where it's just like, okay, we'll just redistribute everything to some of these other ones. But then, yeah, where it's sort of a thing where it's the Russian Grand Prix. It's like
you can't really do that elsewhere, can you?
Yeah, and it's also it's about the location as much as it is.
Mm.
Like, I think there's one or two Russians who drive in F1, maybe.
I'm not sure.
I'm pretty sure there's at least one.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, because Daniel Kvyat at the very least, but still, it's they're not really competing for their country.
They're just what we were saying with the Olympics. Even it's kind of competing
because you're all competing for
individually.
Yeah, you're part of your country's like Olympic team.
Mm.
And yeah, you're competing in terms of the actual event. You're competing by yourself, but everyone, like how you had the middle table for countries and stuff like that. You're technically
you're
part of a team, like Team GB, Team USA, Team Russia, whatever. But with F1, you really are not competing at a national association at all.
I don't think when they give the results, they never say from.
Like, yeah, they might say country, but it's sort of it's the person.
Your win's not linked to your country, is it?
Or it's on the very basic level of you're from this place.
Yeah.
It's not sort of any kind
of background, like.
Yeah, you're not representing Russia or UK or Ireland or Austria or whoever. It's like, yeah, it might be this guy's from there, but it's not.
Not competing for them.
So it's, this is weird. Yeah, so it's then getting into stuff like that where it's kind of weird.
It's just.
The other great thing about this is that it's part of they manipulated lab data that they had to hand over to investigators to do with its last scandal. So it seems like everything is going great. I was going to say, they'll probably then
tamper with the...
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing, where it's basically because of data from the last investigation that they've got new... So, yeah, RISADA is working perfectly functionally right now.
Yep. Oh, here we go. A total of 168 Russian athletes competed under a neutral flag at the 2018 Winter Olympics.
It was Pyeongchang, yeah. It was Sochi that was 2014. So, yeah, it was Pyeongchang that they had to...
Banned following Sochi.
Mm. Yeah, that they can be under a neutral flag for. But it's... Yeah, because
168 masses still like.
Well, that's the thing where it's like pretty much. I'm not even sure who didn't compete. Who would have been there?
That's the thing. It's hardly naming it's like, and shaming those who. I couldn't tell you who. You know.
I know a handful of the ice hockey players, but
and
they
all
played any. And that's the thing where some of them were, the bigger issues were that they played in spite of other things, not even about this.
Not.
And it's. Yeah, it's very true. It's like we were saying earlier, it feels like it's a good idea to have this rule there, but it just doesn't really work.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, in part because we only have these two basically part of the same scandal cases of it, and it seems like, yeah, it just means that everyone applies to compete neutrally.
It's just basically changing the Russian flag into the
Olympic one.
The Olympic flag, yeah.
So that's the thing with some of the people who have reacted negatively to this, where it's, you know, UCAD and USADA are sort of like, yeah, we want a blanket ban on the actual athletes, not about the country, because otherwise, yeah, we just get this sort of thing over again, whereas you actually just, everyone can compete anyway.
Yeah.
So it's, the other thing is, it's not actually going to create change.
No, I was going to say, it's not actually... Who is it affecting? It's probably affecting the Olympic Committee more, like, in terms of them sort of restructuring... Well, not restructuring,
Yeah, because it's quite true. It's like, you're not going to... It's not going to stop state-sanctioned doping.
No.
If all it does is you might get punished at a state level, but all the athletes can still compete. Because, it's like with all the 168 Olympic athletes from Russia in Pyeongchang.
Yeah.
Everyone knew they were Russian. Everyone knew that Russia won all those gold medals.
You're not sat at home wondering where they've come from, and it really is just changing.
And basically, every second that they weren't in competition, they're still going to be talking about Russia. They're still going to be essentially saying they're representing Russia.
In a way, it almost brings them more attention because there's the debate around we have athletes here who are competing neutrally, and then everyone's not questioning where they're from because they know, as we say, they know. But it brings them more attention than if you almost just let them carry on as Russia and...
Yeah, because otherwise... Well, because then it's quite strange that everyone can sort of... Everyone watching can say, oh, yes, there's the asterisk over Russia because, you know, they keep having all this stuff happening.
Mm.
So we know we can't really trust them. And then if anyone sort of tests positive, like nearly all the runners from, I think it was the women's 800 metres in London where nearly everyone tested positive. And so then, yeah, you get cases like that where it's like, oh, yes, we know they were cheating. We don't even suspect they were cheating.
Yeah, straight up.
It also means that you can get the sort of competing under the Olympic flag back to what it's almost meant for, where it's sort of people who don't have a state or are refugees and stuff like that. So one of the only ones I can remember in terms of that was in 2012. You had some athletes from South Sudan who were competing under the Olympic flag because essentially the country didn't get independence in time to get membership with the IOC because it was only independent like that year or the year before.
Yeah.
So it's getting back to what it's actually meant for, which is good things.
Yeah.
As opposed to,
that flag and think, that's the ones who have been...
That's all the sketchy stuff.
Doping issues, yeah.
So it's getting back to what it's actually meant for, which is... Yeah, it's probably that's what feels like the most disappointing thing for me because, Russia have been banned as a nation in athletics since 2015.
It's not going to suddenly change anything for them.
And they basically won 13 golds in Sochi, which was the year before it happened, which was the last tournament they officially competed at. So it's just, it feels a bit pointless.
I think they're just happy to accept that as their own kind of identity now, and it's not going to...
Yeah, I mean, the one that might hurt is if they have to do that for stuff outside of athletics.
Yeah.
Because I'm not sure whether you'd be able to do that with the whole process with the World Cup.
I was going to say, what is actually happening with the World Cup?
Yeah, because, I mean, qualification hasn't started yet, but it's not, in part because of the fluctuating way that squads work in football, you're not necessarily going to be able to sort of say, okay, we have this core of people.
If they're doing a neutral squad, then could they have neutral players from It
would have to all be from Russia, but there isn't really any protocol in place to do.
Yeah, but then
this kind of thing.
If they're all from Russia, then what's the point in?
Well, so how can you do the qualifying? Because that's the thing where it's the closest analogy to this is the ice hockey team from Pyeongchang, but that's different because they were in that automatically. So if you're in it automatically, it doesn't matter how you're then having to clear all these players with WADA so that they can then compete.
Yeah.
That's going to be a mess that we'll have to find how it works.
Whoever's sorting that out, I do not
know. Feel for them. Yeah. So yeah, with that question of how on earth it's going to work, we're going to go with possibly my favourite Christmas song in Step Into Christmas by Elton John. That we are back for the final bit of our show tonight and for the semester and for 2019
and for the century
not the century Decade,
that's not the century.
Not the century.
Definitely not the century.
Century's another 80 years, yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely not.
Yeah, so...
you can tell it's nearly Christmas.
Yes, everyone's brain's a bit fried right now. Yep. So, yeah, England have announced their squad for the Tour of South Africa starting this month. And there are three notable returns with that. And that is James Anderson, who essentially hasn't played for England this year.
Yeah.
Given that he played for all of like four overs Ashes test, he basically didn't play this year. Johnny Bairstow, who has dropped for the recent defeat to New Zealand, and Mark Wood, who has been out since the World Cup final because of side and knee injuries. And with that, I don't think they've dropped anyone. They've just added those three in terms of the squad from the previous series. And
I think there were some debates about if Mo and Ali would come back, but obviously...
Yeah, but I mean, he took a break, so it's partly... That's about him, not about England.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
When he's back, it'll be on his terms, like, sorry, about when England recall him.
Yeah.
It's one member dropped it. Saqib Mahmood, who didn't get capped in New Zealand either, so it feels a bit sorry for him. He's the only man who's been dropped from New Zealand for this one.
That's quite tough.
Yeah, bit of a tough break. Given that you didn't even get to play. So you kind of went to New Zealand for some exercise. For a bit of running around, a bit bowling.
Yeah.
And got to be there while they lost. And got a front row seat things to losing.
Yeah. Just to lose. I can't remember what I was going to say. I was going to say something. Oh, I was going to say there's Matt Parkinson. Because with Ali, I think, wasn't it? He's going to continue as one of the spinners.
Yeah.
England, so.
And Jack Leach will hopefully have his gastroenteritis sorted.
It's just injury central, isn't it? It's who's going to play if they're back to health, pretty much.
I mean, gastroenteritis is one of those where I have no idea how long it takes, but it's different from an injury. It's sort of, once you're good, you're good. It's not one of those things where you have to get yourself back into health, essentially. It's like when it's fixed, you're all right.
Yeah.
It's not like a calf issue, which is what James Anderson had. And with that, you have to play yourself back into game shape and that kind of thing. No, this is just going to be, once he's healthy, he's all right to go. Which is kind of important, given how much they needed him in the New Zealand series, and given that South Africa will probably be tougher.
Yeah.
At the very least, it's going to be more matches.
I think it'll be interesting seeing them just... The vast amount coming back from injury is just going
to... And seeing how some of the new players continue to settle. We had Ollie Pope coming back in. You had Dom Sibley starting to open for England. So it's if they can finally get that opening partnership sorted. And it's sort of taking it, whether they can take it from there or not. So it's the big story is the three guys coming back, because... Otherwise, it is the same. Except for someone who didn't play.
I know, reading a lot of kind of the synopsis, people don't think, obviously, like Mark Wood's going to actually end up playing. So that's the thing, obviously, with naming the squad and then actually who will play.
And it's a 17-man squad, so every game, six people aren't going to be playing.
Yeah, so...
And with that, with Mark Wood, it'll be just as much as anything else. It'll be getting his... shape back to where he needs to be, getting him back into game shape.
It'll be interesting to see how it goes kind of over time, if the first game will be very
particularly with this, where between tests, ODIs and 2020s, this is a 10-match series. So it's why, so by the end of it, he could be playing the one days, something like that, particularly in recent years. James Anderson and Stuart Broad haven't been playing one-day cricket so much, so it's where he'd be the natural replacement. Whilst he probably gets edged out by one or both of them in the test side, you'd expect him playing in the one-dayers. So it's then how he looks in those.
Adjusting to all the new... Not new, but readjusting, I guess.
Yeah, readjusting, because he hasn't played any test cricket this year as well.
That's the thing. People are... they're not just coming back from short-term. It is full years out, as we were saying, like... James Anderson playing four overs and that's it for the year. It'll be very interesting to then come back and
this way, possibly with both 10 games, like stuff where part of it is like, even how much sort of recovery he's been done using all these facilities, as with the sort of specialist pace bowling camp and with the facilities at Manchester City and with Lancashire, there's only so much you can do when you have a dodgy calf. There's only so much actual running you can do, which is the biggest strain on your body as a fastballer in a lot of ways. And then with side and knee injuries, it's another one of those things where this affects everything.
Particularly when you're there for bowling, then
if you have a side injury, you can do all the running stuff and you keep in good shape that way. You just can't bowl. Because for a fastball, if your side's dodgy, you cannot bowl.
You are, yeah. But that's it.
And so with having side and knees, he can't do either. He will be coming into this basically completely cold.
Yeah.
And it's not the greatest side, given
that
they had bowling issues against New Zealand, and they're trying to fix it with two guys who basically haven't played Red Bull cricket this year.
Yeah, we want to be coming in with a fairly strong team and with some decent bowlers, but...
Well, it's at least the theory. I mean, his test batting form has been dodgy for a while now, but it's at least the theory of bringing Johnny Bairstow back in.
Yeah.
Which, it's bringing in one of your better players, at least in theory. And so, he was getting into that, whereas he basically got dropped just to give him a rest. So that's what you want to be doing when you're going from...
Yeah, because...
Oh, yeah, our slightly rotated side lost 1-0 to New Zealand, we're going to play South Africa. Okay, let's get some big guns back in there.
Yeah, because Bairstow's missed out on the selection for the two New Zealand tests.
He didn't go on the tour.
Yeah.
Straight, plain and simple.
So.
And the batting wasn't necessarily the issue. The issue is the area where you're bringing in two crocked guys.
Yeah.
It doesn't make you feel too good about
this. I was going to say, we're not seeing a very positive batting at the moment, are we? But
no.
It's just one of those things that you can't affect. It's not even that people are... I was going to say not on form. I mean, obviously, they're not on form, but it's because of injury. It's not it'd be more, frustrating if people weren't injured and just not on form.
Mm.
That they're coming back cold.
Yeah, because the thing is, it's like... if you're in dodgy form like Johnny Bairstow, it could have been good to get a break. Because then you can sort of reset, recharge your batteries, all that kind of thing. Because batting's very mental. So then, that even though he was in bad form... You can break that bad form with a break.
Could have been a positive
for him.
Exactly.
But when it's a case of, these guys have had really dodgy for fast bowlers injuries basically the whole year, and now you're relying on them to turn your bowling attack around that struggled in New Zealand. And you're going up against South Africa. I feel like we could see a lot of Hashim Amla this Christmas.
Mm.
We could see a lot of him at the crease.
Yeah.
Which, it's not the worst thing in the world if you're remotely neutral, but for an England fan, it's not great.
No, definitely not.
And it also feels like it's reinforcing, to a degree, England's reliance on the same guys, seamer-wise.
Yeah, I was going to say, looking at the lineup, I wasn't kind of particularly surprised by most of the names I see there, but as you say, it's the kind of...
Sooner or later, James Anderson's 37. He's not going to keep going. You have to move on at some point. Yeah. So it's better to give these guys chances at some point. Like,
have you got Sam Curran in them?
Yeah,
some of the younger ones.
Sam Curran played in the New Zealand series, but other than that, it was kind of the same old guys. I mean, Jofra Archer's new, Chris Wokes is new, Chris Wokes is established, and then Stuart Broad is... But Chris Wokes will keep going for a while. Stuart Broad, there's a couple of years left in it.
We're just basically judging how long... How long we give them?
You've got to give these young guys a chance sooner rather later, unless you want to be betting in three at once.
Yeah, that's the problem, all then go out at one point and you've got no one to kind of...
Yeah, because while they're different in age, I can't help but feel like Stuart Broad and Chris and James Anderson will end up retiring at some other time.
Yeah.
Because it's where they've been so synonymous with each other, so... They're going to end up going around at the same time. You don't want to be replacing them with two uncapped guys or two guys who've got a cap against Ireland or something.
Yeah, that's it.
So you've got to give these guys chances.
Maybe that's why there's so many injuries as well. Age.
But
it does kind of show, I guess.
Age that's when you start to get the slightly less typical fast bowler injuries. The typical fast bowler injuries are basically your knees and your back.
Yeah.
And James Anderson had a calf injury. So that's the sort of thing where it's your body's kind of fraying at the seams here. It's beginning to fall apart a little bit.
Notice of it.
And then it's also, you can't push yourself back in the same way. The big reason that his calf tore against Australia was that he sort of tried to play with it sort of torn.
Yeah, playing with it half. that's the thing with a lot of them coming back from injury. You've just got to hope.
And that's one of the biggest
they
things
are
that
fully.
Yeah, because that's the biggest thing that like increases with age is just recovery time from everything. Just, yeah, whether that's playing, whether that's injuries, whatever.
And also with it being such a long series with 10 matches.
Yeah.
Kind of to keep going for that long as well.
Because well, that's a good thing with the old horses of the bowling attack is that they will only be there for those first four.
Yeah.
Or last four. Depending on how exactly they've done this.
Depending on how they're going to choose to do it, yeah.
Yeah, depending on whether the test come first or the test come at the end. I think the test come first, but
I have seen.
Yeah, because the first test is starting on the 26th of December, so they're going to test first. So yeah, he'll just be there for the first four games. And then they'll basically be going home.
And then go. That's it.
And that's fine. Later. And that's almost easier. You'd rather have get him through those first four games, then you can go home and rest. Just put him
the next one.
Just put him in bubble wrap until the summer.
Onto the plane you go. Yeah.
Onto the plane. Get some bubble wrap. Don't do anything stressful. Have a nice time.
Have a nice Christmas.
And then, well, the Christmas will be gone.
So,
but
Christmas is over. Have a nice New Year. New Year will be over.
Yeah. So it's just have a nice spring.
Yeah.
And then just get on with it, and get the young guys at least some. Because that's the thing where you've got these guys like, I'm not sure Zach Roy has ever played for England yet. He's been in the past four squads or something like that.
I have to say, it's not a name I remember seeing on score sheets.
Yeah, because it's always really, but he's always getting called up, which is a negative. It's to some degree a negative because it means that he's not being able to play cricket, which is the most important thing for a young player.
But they deem him good enough to make the squad each time.
And he's never playing. So there's only so much value you get from being around the England coaches.
Yeah.
I'm not saying anything bad about the England coaches. It's just, at some point,
you actually
as a young player, you actually need to
faith.
Play.
Yeah.
That's the most important thing for a young player in any sport is actually, there's some things that you can't learn in practice.
No. Practice and watching people only gets you so far. I think that's what
So at the end of the day, he has to play at some 100%. Point. Whether that's for Essex or for England.
Maybe this is his time.
Yeah, I mean, that's
be interesting to see.
That was the frustrating thing with Ollie Pope this summer, right? Just after he got a double century. He got called out for England and didn't play for
the didn't play.
Didn't play. And then he got shoulder injury. It's like, oh, great. He basically lost a few months of
the
development.
The time
there.
Where. And also wasted the point where they could have used him. And
yeah, because
Surrey
had a pretty iffy
season
in the end. So they could have really used him, but they weren't allowed to. Because he got called up as cover. He wasn't called up in the squad. So it feels like that with a lot of the young players with England, where it's just, okay, let him play for their county or actually play him.
Yeah.
Because it's the thing with both the Coen brothers, the thing with, you know, Ollie Pope to agree, it's the thing with Matt Parkinson. It's with all these guys where they're sort of in and around the squad all the time, with Saqib Mahmood, where he's just been in New Zealand just for some coaching, apparently.
Yeah.
It's like, either let him have a break, because that's the other thing with fast bowlers, they need
that's
a break
the thing,
at some
if you
point.
Keep coaching them, they're going to reach their kind of high point, and you need to then let them go and play, otherwise they're going to just tire. And
you're running down their body. It's like with fast bowling, you need a break at some point.
Yeah.
If you're taking them on tours over the winter, they're not getting that break. And if you're not even
there's
getting the benefit of playing
play
them.
It
feels like England need to sort out the youth development to a degree in terms of where they're going to just do it.
If you're split in half the team almost, the young ones and the experienced ones, there's no kind of middle ground and merging of the two, really.
Yeah, because part of that is you could say, oh, that's about different selection teams and their potential flaws in that. But it's also there by design to agree where it's like either they want the next guys or they want the guys they already have. They don't want the guys who could be
they
handy
kind
for
of
a bit.
They don't want to merge the,
Yeah, they don't want the guys who could be handy for a few years.
Yeah.
Except for when they do, where it's then they don't pick anyone sort of in that sort of almost 25-ish to 27 range. But then they randomly have picked some guys who are 28, 29, like Joe Denley, and bring them into the team. It's like, why? So it's either you're having guys right now or for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
There's no sort of, okay, let's have
no
them for the next 5 years. There's not really any of that.
Yeah, it's just kind of finishing off the good ones who are very near the end, and then very, very
and
much
sort of
starting
getting them in
completely
early.
From afresh.
Yeah, almost getting them in as babies.
Isn't Sam Curran like 21? I think, or Sam even
Curran,
younger than that actually.
Yeah, Sam Curran is one who always makes everyone feel really old.
Yeah,
because
I think he might even be like 19. But
yeah, because it's also when he started playing for Surrey when he was still taking his A levels.
Yeah,
he's turned 21 this June. And it's sort of, he started playing for Surrey when he was taking his A levels. It's sort of in the crowd. It's like, oh my god, I feel ancient. This kid is playing professional cricket and they're like
everyone
17
like their dad
and it's that is the most important use for him. If you keep messing him about, where it's like, oh, you're calling him up for England, but then you're not really playing him, and then you're not letting him play for. Sorry, you have a good system of developing players. And
that's
look at half
the
side.
They get stuck in limbo, don't they? Because they're being called up, so they can't play elsewhere. But at the same point, they're then not playing, being called up for England.
And it's also meaning they can't train in the same way, because it's worse where your county will be doing certain things in terms of developing you. And then England are more focused on right now. So it's like your county might want you to be sort of
missing out on that kind of future development for the
The long term development as opposed to short term.
Which is not going to have an
impact on. With some of these guys where it's like, okay, you might need to clean up some bits of your technique in order to have a style that works for the long term, whereas England will be like, okay, let's sort of shore up this. Like
very short term.
Let's put a plaster on it, or let's put a cast on it so it will function right.
Get it through those next,
as opposed to sort of actually setting the bone and getting it sorted.
Actually.
Which is what your county will be doing, because they have more of a long-term investment in you. Which England don't.
Which, you know,
well, they do and they don't, because it's like...
Use them for the short term. And
yeah, because it's supposed to be England will always have new players, because they have how many counties feeding them, whereas your county side will be invested in you to a different degree.
They want to maintain you for longer.
Yeah, because it makes sense to them. Well, they want to maximise you. They want to maximise you because they can't necessarily replace you as readily as England can.
Yeah.
They will if they're replacing you, it essentially has to be someone outside or a kid. In literal terms, a lot of time. So it's that's something they need to sort out. So with that, we're going to go with our final song break for today, and that will be Please Come Home for Christmas by the Eagles.
Bells will be ringing the sad, sad news. Oh, what a Christmas to have the blues. My baby's gone. Me greeting once again. Choirs will be singing silent night. Christmas carol by candlelight. Please come home for Christmas. Please come home for Christmas. Not for Christmas, by New Year's night. Friends and relations, send salutations. Sure as the stars shine above. Well, this is Christmas. Yes, Christmas, my dear. Time of year to be with the one you